This is a special edition of Sound Ideas, bringing you a debate between the candidates for Congress in the 13th District of Illinois. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Joining us at the Normal Theater in Uptown Normal are incumbent Republican Representative Rodney Davis of Taylorville and challenger Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan of Springfield. Also joining us for this live broadcast is our audience. Thanks to everyone for attending this debate. This forum will feature questions developed by the reporters on our panel with public input from those submitted at WGLT.org. The panelists this evening are Ryan Denham, the digital director for WGLT Public Radio, Mark Pickering, the editor of the Pantograph newspaper, and Howard Packowitz, reporter for WJBC. This debate is taking place through a wide-ranging partnership of community entities devoted to furthering public discourse, including the McLean County League of Women Voters, the Normal Theater, Illinois State University, Heartland Community College, Illinois Wesleyan University, Illinois State University, the American Democracy Project, the Pantograph, WJBC, and WGLT, a service of Illinois State University's School of Communication. The League's Becky Gropp and Alexis Kalish are serving as our timekeepers this evening. We determine the order for opening statements by drawing numbers, with the lowest number going first, and after that, rotating among candidates. We will be asking as many questions as time permits during this forum. Because this is live radio with a hard end time, candidates may have an abbreviated but equal amount of time to answer the last question. Reporters on this panel may ask for clarifying comments and pose follow-up questions as needed. That brings us to our opening statements, first by Representative Rodney Davis, who drew the lowest number. You have 2 minutes for your opening statement.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Thanks to WGLT, the Pantograph, JBC, for hosting this event. Mark, Howard, Ryan, Charlie, we appreciate the opportunity to stand here and talk about the successes that we've seen over my short time in Congress. It's been a privilege for me to be able to work with communities like Bloomington and Normal to bring good-paying jobs, historic low unemployment, and a growing economy back to this district. These are the things that I promised when I stood here in Normal 5.5 years ago asking for your vote. And after three debates with my opponent, we've seen some clear differences. I want to continue to move America forward. Good policies that lead to historic low unemployment, rising wages for all Americans. And my opponent wants to back the failed policies and strategies of the past that held America back and held communities like Bloomington Normal back. I want to continue to be able to work with Mayor Coos on infrastructure and to see what has happened in Uptown Normal is just nothing short of amazing, to see what has been accomplished in this community. And that's what working in a positive direction with our local officials means to any member of Congress, including me. I want to make sure we work with them to pass a long-term highway bill. Opioids. It was a privilege for me to stand here in Normal with Sergeant Kapchinski and Chief Bleichner to introduce a bill to stop pharmacy shopping, because they noticed here in Bloomington Normal that somebody was shopping for opioids at our local pharmacies, and they wanted to know why we didn't ask for a name and an address of somebody picking up such addictive drugs. Because of their advice, because of constituent service, which I prioritized, we introduced a bill that we would require all pharmacies nationwide to treat the purchase of opioids at our pharmacies the same way we treat Sudafed. That's why I'm asking for your vote, and I look forward to your questions.
And Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, your opening remarks.
Thank you, and thanks so much for having us tonight, and thank you all for being here. You know, many of you know that the reason that I got into this race is because in the summer of 2009, my son, who was 12 at the time, was bit by a tick, ended up in the pediatric intensive care unit of our children's hospital. And what I know to be true for our family is that if we had not had access to good care, I would be a mom of two and not three. And if we hadn't had good insurance at the time, it would have bankrupted our family. And if they hadn't lifted the caps with the ACA, it would have devastated us. So I got into this race when I saw Congressman Davis and Donald Trump and what looked like a frat party on the White House lawn celebrating that they'd voted to take health care away from millions of Americans. I thought, somebody's got to get in and stand up to them, and it should be me. So now, after putting about 60,000 miles on my car and being part of over 110 public free meetings, 14 town halls most recently. I can tell you that the only thing about our family story that makes it unique is that it's ours, because every family has their own healthcare story. Everything is at stake in this election. Access to quality, affordable healthcare, protecting Social Security and Medicare from cuts, getting our kids a good education, trade deals that work for Central Illinois farmers, and the character of our nation. We have a responsibility to get ourselves back on track, to protect our neighbors and our communities. And there is a very clear choice in this race. I got in this race to protect health care. Tonight, Congressman Davis will try and tell you again that he protected people with pre-existing conditions from discriminations, and it's not true. He voted repeatedly to eliminate or gut those protections. He'll tell you about a tax bill that works for the middle class, and it doesn't.
This is a special Sound Ideas and a congressional debate live from the Normal Theater in Uptown. As agreed, each candidate will have up to 2 minutes to answer questions with a one-minute response if desired after each candidate has had an opportunity to answer the initial question. Follow-up questions carry a one-minute time limit. Our first question comes from Mark Pickering of the Pantograph.
First of all, thanks to both of you for being here tonight. AP reported late today that stocks tumbled again amid concerns that the administration will impose tariffs on all remaining imports from China. What is your position on the trade policy of the Trump administration, particularly as it affects farmers in Central Illinois?
And Ms. Dirksen-Lonergan, you are first to answer.
Well, I can tell you that I have heard a real shift in what farmers are talking to me about as I have traveled the district. In the beginning, they really wanted to believe that President Trump was a businessman and it was going to be okay. I don't hear that anymore. We're in the middle of soybean country. You know, right now, Illinois stands to lose $4 billion in exports because of the tariffs. $1 billion of that is soybeans. So what I hear from farmers now is that they're scared. They're scared about next year, but they're scared about the markets. They just want markets to sell to. And we've had places like Argentina and Brazil nipping at our heels for a long time, and they got served China up on a silver platter. Are those markets going to come back to our farmers? We don't know. They're very worried. And, you know, I was down at a town hall in Bond County, and I was talking to this farmer, Don. Now, Don has been through the ringer, and he has made it through. And he said, but Betsy, he said, I may make it through this one. He said, but my neighbors, I don't think they're going to make it. And I don't know what to tell them. And I think what we have to tell them is that we need a representative in Washington, D.C., who stands up for Central Illinois. We have one who sits on the Ag Committee, who let the deal expire to come back to Central Illinois to campaign. Those are his priorities. I think we expect a representative who stays and gets the job done. None of us get to leave our job if it's not done. I don't think our representative should do that either.
Representative Davis, your turn on the tariff question.
Well, thank you. Great question. Obviously, China is not the fairest trading partner that we have here in the United States of America. China has single-handedly tried to decimate our steel industry. That's a national security issue. President Trump campaigned on saving our domestic steel industry, and he's done that. And I was down in Granite City when he made his first visit back to Illinois as president, and there were 500 screaming steel workers that were excited to be able to have their job back. You know, farmers in this district know who's got their back, and that's me. I helped write the 2014 Farm Bill. I took many of their bits of advice and their suggestions and turned it into legislation that saved taxpayers $112 billion in mandatory spending, rather than the $23 billion that was projected. And as a matter of fact, I talk to farmers about tariffs. I'm very concerned about the long-term impact of tariffs. But you know what the farmers in this district are telling me? Because all the farm groups are supporting my efforts, be it the Farm Bureau's political arm, be it the soybean associations, the corn growers, the beef and pork producers. They know who's standing up for them in Washington, and that's me. They're concerned about tariffs, but they're ecstatic with the preliminary agreements of the new NAFTA They're ecstatic with the preliminary agreements and opening up markets in the EU, in Japan, and South Korea that we haven't had. This administration has shown them successes, and we're going to continue now to go back to Washington, D.C. after this election. And we're going to hopefully see many Democrats that I serve with that are concerned about tariffs now when they supported them in the past, but because this was a Republican president, they now don't like them. We're going to see these agreements that open up markets to our farmers, and we're going to see if bipartisanship will reign when we approve these new trade deals that will put more money in the pockets of our Illinois farmers. And China doesn't trade fair on pork. China isn't letting our soybeans into the market. These are the truths and these are the facts.
We go to one-minute responses. Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, you are first on one-minute rebuttal or response.
Thank you. You know, when President Trump first did the steel tariffs, I understood. I'm endorsed by United Steelworkers because they were getting a raw deal. And so, of course, they were excited that those jobs are coming back, and I stood right there with them. But what I hear from farmers who are, again, coming to these open meetings, I heard from farmers down in Montgomery County who are worried because they count on the Conservation Stewardship Program dollars. Now, the bill that Congressman Davis is looking at would take those dollars out of Bond, Macon, or Montgomery and Macoupin counties, $1.3 million, and give it away to Colorado and California. And the new NAFTA deal, there's still a 25% tariff on Canadian steel. That is what we use to build our farming equipment. The farmers can't afford that. There's a lot of concerns out there that farmers are sharing with me.
And Representative Davis, your rebuttal.
Well, the farmers that I interact with on a daily basis and are supporting me in my efforts for reelection, they know that there's not anybody in this district, anybody in Illinois or on the Ag Committee that has worked harder to make sure that we pass a farm bill. That farm bill was caught up in partisan politics all because of what's going to happen in the next 8 days. We need to continue to have a bipartisan member of the House Ag Committee like me that's going to put forth good solutions, good suggestions, and sit down at the table to find those solutions that are going to continue to give our farmers the safety net that I helped write 4 years ago and that they're very happy with. These are the issues that are at stake in this election. You want somebody who's going to have a proven track record on agricultural success, I'm the person you need to vote for. We're going to go back, and I've offered to go back to Washington. I would have loved to have seen bipartisanship reign with this farm bill, but unfortunately, we got zero Democrat input, and we've got to do better when this election's over.
Our next question goes to Howard Packowitz of WJBC, and Congressman Davis, you will have first answer.
Well, it's dangerous to assume anything, but for argument's sake, Congressman Davis, we're going to assume that you will not support impeachment of the president. So if Republicans gain control of the House or regain control on such matters as trade, Russia, the Mueller investigation, should Congress escalate its checks and balances of the current administration? And I'd ask you to explain your reasoning for that. Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, you've said that people on the campaign trail aren't asking you about impeachment, but we are. And some Republicans have argued that that impeachment is on the national Democratic agenda if they take control. Where do you stand on impeachment, first, Congressman Davis?
Well, Howard, thank you for the question. And I believe Congress should always exercise our oversight responsibility of any administration, be it a Republican or Democrat. I was proud to join my colleague, Michelle Lujan Grisham, to go after USDA officials in the last administration for lunch shaming. We don't think any child who can't afford a lunch or who hasn't been able to pay back a debt on their lunch period needs to be shamed with certain types of food. And Michelle and I worked together with the last administration who was not helpful on that issue. But you brought up impeachment. Impeachment is a process that should be at the highest level of expectations, Republican or Democrat. This should not be a partisan issue. And unfortunately, many in the Democratic Party, many donors who are giving to my opponent's campaign, for them, impeachment is the top issue. My opponent has raised over half of her over half the money that she raised in the last quarter came from two states alone, California and New York. They don't care about the farmers of Central Illinois. They don't care about the steel workers who work in Granite City. They don't care about the jobs that have been created here in Central Illinois at Bridgestone, right here in Bloomington. What they care about is removing Donald J. Trump from the White House. And that's exactly what's going to happen if my opponent and the Democrats take over Congress. And when you have impeachment proceedings, it will suck all the energy out of the room. And we have nothing but success when moving good policies forward. I had the chance to talk with former Secretary of Transportation, Congressman Ray LaHood, just last week, who chaired the impeachment proceedings of President Clinton. And I asked Ray, how much got done? How many infrastructure bills did you pass during that impeachment process? How many bills to fight the opioid crisis that we've done here in this Congress would you be able to pass if impeachment happened?
Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan.
Sure. Well, first, I want to say that I'm very proud that over 75% of the money that I raised came from individuals. Over 75% of Congressman Davis's money comes from PACs and special interests. Fundamental difference. In terms of impeachment, that's not why I'm going to Washington. I'm going to Washington to work for the people of the 13th District. The reason that I know what you want from me is because I stand in front of you on a regular basis. I ask, and you tell me. You want quality, affordable health care. You want your Social Security and Medicare that you've paid into your whole lives. You want to be able to live on what you've paid in there. You want a tax reform bill that really helps you and isn't a corporate giveaway. You want to be able to get your kids an education that doesn't leave them or you or their grandparents buried in debt. I know what you want from me because you tell me. That's why I want to go to Washington, is to take your priorities and make them happen.
We have time for 1 minute rebuttals.
You know, that's exactly what I've been doing for the past 5.5 years, is taking your priorities to Washington. It's a 24-hour-a-day job, and it's an opportunity that I don't take lightly. It's interesting, my opponent talks about 75% of her money coming from individuals. If individuals mean some of the most liberal donors that we have in this nation, then she's absolutely correct. The money that I get from local PACs, folks like Walt at Caterpillar in Decatur, who may throw a couple of bucks in his paycheck towards Cat's Pack, well, they believe that in growing jobs in Decatur, taking what used to be an unemployment rate in Decatur, Illinois, of upwards of 10%, now Walt's biggest concern right now at Caterpillar in Decatur is getting enough people to fill the jobs. And what my opponent does is she has no plans. My plans are on the table. I want to invest more in education and skills building so that we can get people out of poverty into our skills building programs and apprentice programs and put them into jobs at places like Caterpillar or even Bridgestone right here in Bloomington. That's what I'm doing in Washington, and that's what I intend to do once reelected.
And Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan.
While we, the taxpayers, have been paying Congressman Davis's salary, he's reaped almost $2 million in salary from us over the years. He's taken over $4 million from special interests and PACs. He's taken over $125,000 from Big Pharma, $95,000 of which is from pharmaceutical companies that are being sued right now in connection with the opioid crisis. I have pledged I don't want a dime from Big Pharma because I want to make sure that I am always answering to my employers, and that is you. You are who I want to work for.
We have a request for a follow-up from Howard Packowitz.
Just briefly, Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, I don't know where you stand on impeachment.
The Mueller investigation needs to play out. We need to let it come to its natural end and go from there. Anything else is hypothetical.
This is Sound Ideas on GLT. I'm Charlie Schlenko. We're at the Normal Theater with Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan and U.S. Representative Rodney Davis. Ryan Denham has a question.
Gun violence, especially mass shootings, have become a strange, sad part of everyday life in this country. We saw it again this past weekend in Pittsburgh. Congressman Davis, you yourself were caught in the crossfire of a shooting at a congressional baseball practice. What specific measures would each of you support to reduce gun violence in this country?
Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, you have first crack at this one.
Thank you. Well, this weekend was another brutal reminder of what we face with gun violence. And, you know, what I know that we can do, first of all, I come from a family of legal responsible gun owners, and that's reflective of my community as well. And we can pass universal background checks, because what really is that? It's checking for violent history. Over 90% of Americans agree that we need federal universal background checks. In terms of NRA members, over 73% of NRA members agree we need universal background checks. Now, these are things that we agree on and we can get done, and they shouldn't be political issues. And I can tell you that when I was in Champaign-Urbana, part of a public forum on gun violence, I was there with students, with parents, with Moms Demand Action, with the superintendent of schools, with gun owners and NRA members, the state's attorney. It was a conversation about gun violence. So I want to make sure that we listen to each other and we can agree that universal background checks is something that we can get done with people at the table who have the political will to get it done. We can keep guns out of the hands of violent offenders and domestic abusers and the dangerously mentally ill. We can do that. And something else that I've talked about a lot is, and I was really happy that they finally allowed the Center for Disease Control to study gun violence as a public health crisis, but we need the funding for it, because gun violence is not one issue. It does need to be studied. We were able to figure out smoking and seatbelts by studying it as a public health crisis, and I think we should do the same thing with gun violence and get to the root causes so that we can deliver actionable steps.
Representative Davis, your answer.
Well, Ryan, great question, and yes, you are correct. I had the unfortunate experience of having to run from bullets on a baseball field. I don't wish that terrifying experience on anyone. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, and what you're doing. No one deserves to have to wake up with the same memories of sounds and smells and that day playing over in your head daily. As a matter of fact, it's why my heart breaks every time we see a tragedy like we saw in Parkland, like we saw in other schools, like we saw just, I believe, today in North Carolina. And then what we saw over the weekend is another tragic, tragic reminder that we as Americans have to do better. You know, the shooter who came at me and my friends just disagreed with us politically. The shooter that took innocent lives at a synagogue in Pittsburgh committed an obvious hate crime. He was anti-Semitic, and he needs to be held accountable. All those who commit these crimes need to be held accountable for their actions. They're the ones to blame. So after being involved in the shooting experience I was in, I went back to the Capitol and took a pledge that day to help do what I can to turn down the volume and the heat on the heated rhetoric that we see in today's political climate. Work together more so, because that's what happens in Washington that a lot of folks don't hear about. About 99% of what we do is on a bipartisan basis. And I led the charge to fix the flaws in our background check system. I've co-sponsored a bill that would allow law enforcement officials to take firearms away from dangerous individuals. We've redone our mental health laws to ensure that families and educators and doctors can address any issues before they get to the crisis stage. And I also proudly led the charge to reinstitute and refund the Secure Our Schools program that many schools in Illinois are taking advantage of right now.
Rebuttals?
Yes, again, over 90% of Americans agree that we need federal universal background checks. We need to get that done. And, you know, and Congressman Davis has taken over $95,000 from the National Rifle Association. I have pledged not to take a dime from them, because they don't really represent gun owners. They represent a gun lobby. And I want to continue to have dialogue with all of our neighbors and our community members who are legal responsible gun owners, who also have children and grandchildren in schools and want to work together to solve the crisis of gun violence.
You know, I'm a member of the NRA. I give them money in my membership each year. And it's insulting to the tens of thousands of NRA members in this congressional district alone to minimize how they feel about being able to protect themselves and their families. And it's also frustrating when we continue to hear discussions about where contributions come from. When my opponent raised over $1 million from liberal donors that are outside our state, I'd rather be beholden to the good law-abiding gun owners in this district that I represent than Barbara Streisand and the Hollywood and the San Francisco and the New York City liberals that are going to ask for one thing, to impeach President Trump. And I would certainly hope that that's not going to be the case.
Ryan Denham has a follow-up question.
Congressman Davis, you talked about doing your part to try to turn down the rhetoric and the tenor of the debate in this country. So back in October of 2016, you withdrew your support for Donald Trump over his comments about women on the Access Hollywood tape. He won anyway. Since he's been president, though, you've rarely criticized him, even in his most uncivil moments. Again and again, you've preached the value of civility in politics. How do you square that with your approach to this president?
Well, I criticize the president. I criticize people on all sides when they make comments that I think are not kind, and they're not worthy of having a good, unhate-filled debate. As a matter of fact, I criticized the president just last week when he made comments in Montana. But I also criticized Bernie Sanders when Bernie Sanders says our policy differences are going to kill people. Because that type of rhetoric is the type of rhetoric that leads somebody who's obviously charged and unstable to come fire at people like me and my friends on a baseball field while screaming healthcare at the same time. After experiencing what I've experienced, I am somebody who has decided to not just criticize, but to actually take action. That's why I brought my colleague Jimmy Panetta from California, a Democrat, to talk to the next generation at our schools here in this district to show them that Republicans and Democrats do work together and that we're friends.
And 1 minute to you as well, Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan.
You know, recently I was very proud to have been endorsed by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And they said in that Congressman Davis has become a loyal foot soldier. And that what they liked about me is that I'm independent, will march to beat of my own drum. And I appreciate that, because I think you have to be willing to stand up when people need to stand up. You know, this administration has been repeatedly uncivil. Whether it's been a tweet or a rally, it has been uncivil many times. And Congressman Davis has not been a check and balance. Yesterday, I was honored to receive the endorsement of the State General Register, which has endorsed Congressman Davis twice in the past. And again, it was because his loyalty is no longer with the people of Central Illinois. It is with the Trump administration and the Republican Party that we know of right now, not the Republicans that I grew up with. And I think you have to be able to call people out when they need it.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org in a debate in the 13th Congressional District. Our next question goes to Mark Pickering of the Pantograph.
The American Health Care Act, passed by the GOP-led House but defeated in the Senate as a partial repeal of Obamacare, states that nothing shall be construed as permitting health insurance issuers to limit access to health coverage for individuals with pre-existing conditions. In discussing possible changes to Obamacare, does this language need to be explicit to mandate that insurance companies cannot deny coverage for pre-existing conditions?
Congressman Davis, you are first.
Well, that's exactly why we put that language in there. It's always funny that when you're a legislator, you're sitting around a table trying to come up with solutions. And solutions are needed when it comes to Obamacare. The promises that were made when Obamacare was passed was that the average family is going to save $2,600 a year in premiums. If you like your doctor, you can keep him or her. Those promises were not kept. Premiums have gone up for those on the individual marketplace by 108%. And it's families like the Stacys, who are farmers in Decatur, that have seen their premiums and deductibles skyrocket under the Affordable Care Act. They pay upwards of $12,000 a year in premiums and another $12,000 a year in deductibles. So if they were to be diagnosed with a deadly disease, how are they going to afford to pay for it? How are they going to afford to use the coverage that they have? We have to fix this problem, and supporting the status quo like my opponent does not do that. I have fought to make sure there are layers upon layers of protections for pre-existing conditions. My opponent will be dishonest once again, and she will say that I voted 11 times to take that away. That is not the case. Our intent with that language was to make sure that we protected the 10 essential health benefits and ensuring that the number one priority of mine as the husband of a 19-year cancer survivor was to protect pre-existing condition coverage for families who didn't ask for a disease and don't deserve to be turned down for coverage. What you're going to hear from my opponent is, well, you didn't guarantee affordability. The Congressional Budget Office said that our plan would lower premiums for individuals on the individual marketplace. And protecting the status quo right now is doing absolutely nothing to help the families like the Stacys in Decatur, Illinois, be able to afford coverage when they need to use it. That's why something needs to be done, and that's why I voted for that bill.
And 2 minutes to Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan as well.
I'm really glad you asked about this, because Congressman Davis has been subject to 6 separate fact checks regarding what he says about what he did for people with pre-existing conditions and what the truth is. 6 different organizations. Just today, the Washington Post called him out again for spreading lies about me and saying that the Washington Post, that they were using 4 Pinocchios on something that I said. False. And I'm going to read this to you because I think it's worth it. This sentence was mostly a public relation exercise, but notice the difference. It says limit access to health care coverage, not deny coverage, as Davis claimed. Everyone has access to buying a Tesla, but it makes a difference whether you can afford to buy it. We asked these lawmakers, including Davis, whether they would be willing to withdraw the citation of the Pinocchios. None agreed to do so. That's dismaying. These lawmakers have been put on notice that they are peddling falsehoods. And politicians who care about their reputation should acknowledge that they made a mistake and offer an apology. Instead, they apparently believe it's politically advantageous to continue to deceive the voters in their districts. It is especially galling because many accuse their opponents of spreading lies and then cry for Pinocchios, which is exactly what Congressman Davis has been doing perpetually. And now his ads are once again lying about what I have said about health care, that I am supporting some $32 trillion plan. Not true. Hasn't been true. I have always said that I want to fix the ACA. I want to make sure that we stabilize it and then introduce Medicare's public option into rural and small communities and small business owners. Far cry of a difference.
And at a guess, both of you are going to want 1-minute responses on that one. Congressman Davis, you are first.
Well, my opponent once again has offered to help make Medicare even more insolvent by offering to expand it without any real plan. My opponent also said during the primary that she's open to looking at universal health care down the road. Well, it's down the road for former President Obama, who's now endorsed it and run away from his signature bill. It's down the road for your mentor, career politician, Senator Dick Durbin, who's been in Washington since I was 12. He's now running away from the bill that he's voted for. And what we see with fact checkers right now, unfortunately, is the politicization of what fact checkers are about. As a matter of fact, when you have a fact checker that says that this language that is clear is just a public publicity stunt, I'm in the room writing legislation. I take my job very seriously. And when we put a sentence like that in a bill that's going to become a law. We don't need the Washington Post fact checker, who's obviously politically biased, to come back and say, you know what? We know what your intent was when writing that. He didn't know my intent, and neither does my opponent.
Time, sir. A reminder to our audience, please avoid demonstrations. We're here to hear the candidates. And Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, your one-minute response.
The St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the State Journal Register, the Washington Post not once but twice, AARP, American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Society, American Heart Association, the Congressional Budget Office. All of them lying? I don't think so. Do they all have a political bent? I don't think so. The facts are the facts, and you've been checked.
And we have a follow-up request from Mark Pickering.
Yeah, let's just stay with this for a second. Besides the pre-existing condition issue, what else would you specifically do to fix the ACA?
Well, I want to make sure that that hospitals and insurance companies are able to plan out their budgets. So like the subsidies, for example, that we know that they need, that when they use it to expand Medicaid, to serve more people, you know, they need those subsidies not just year by year. They need it planned out because that's how they build their budget. So let's make sure that we stabilize that so that they can do that, so that there's no up and down in premiums. And the other thing about making sure that we can offer a public option, the public option is fully paid for, except for administrative costs, by the people who are buying the insurance. It is not subsidized like it is for Medicare. It's not really subsidized, it's that they've been paying into it. People who haven't paid into it aren't getting the benefit of it. They're just being able to purchase that insurance. I think making sure that we protect the essential health benefits, and it goes beyond pre-existing condition coverage. It's making sure the caps don't go back on. It's making sure that, thank you.
And Congressman Davis, 1 minute on what you would do to fix the ACA.
Well, what we tried to do was through the American Health Care Act. It protected the 10 essential health benefits, provided layers upon layers of protections for pre-existing conditions, made sure that there are no lifetime caps, made sure that young men and women could stay on their parents' insurance till they were 26, and was lowering premiums at the same time. This was our plan that we tried to fix for the families like the Stacys who are being ravaged by high costs, $24,000 a year in premiums and deductibles, completely unaffordable if they're diagnosed. Keeping the status quo, keeping the Affordable Care Act also means making sure that most of my constituents in this district get their insurance through their employer. The existing ACA will implement taxes that will punish employers and labor unions for offering good quality, affordable health care. So protecting the status quo means that you're going to protect the ability for employers to have to be forced by the federal government to offer less coverage and charge more. That's wrong. That's what I went to Washington to fix.
And our next question goes to Howard Packowitz of WJBC. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, and you're listening to a debate among the candidates for Congress in the 13th Congressional District of Illinois.
Both of you, we've talked a lot this evening about softening the civil discourse. In that spirit, I offer this question. Who is your favorite currently serving lawmaker of the opposite party? And why does that person stand out in your mind?
Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan.
Okay, give me just a second, because it was always John McCain.
That's why I said currently serving.
Huh?
That's why I suggested currently serving, unfortunately.
Okay, I'm going to have to think about it for just a minute here. Of the opposite party, who is one of my favorites? I know. I'm thinking. This is my thinking face. Ooh, can you come back to me?
We'll do that. Congressman Davis.
I think that says a lot when you can't name somebody you admire in the other party. I can tell you Jimmy Panetta is one of my best friends. Jimmy is somebody that I will continue to work with as a member of Congress and continue to build my bipartisan credentials as being the 40th most bipartisan member of Congress. Be it Jimmy Panetta, be it Josh Gottheimer, be it Tom Suozzi, You can even see examples of me working with some of the most liberal wings of the Democrat members of the House of Representatives to help pass student debt reform, to allow companies to be able to set up programs that'll help recent graduates pay off their student debts. I got a history of building these relationships. I can go on and on about some of my best friends in Congress, Michelle Lujan Grisham, I mentioned earlier, that we worked together as subcommittee chair and ranking member on the House Agriculture Biotech Subcommittee. A history of working together and not just knowing who you support and who you respect in the other party is what this district needs, and it's why I'm asking for your vote once again.
We'll give you a second bite of the apple there.
Sorry about that. It just took me a hot minute. So one of our neighbors here, I don't know why this didn't come to me right off the out of the gate, Darren LaHood, who I've known for a long time. And Congressman LaHood has always been easy to talk to. And I very much appreciate the leadership that he has shown. And I know he works very closely with one of my own personal heroes, Congresswoman Sherry Bustos, and that they do a lot of good things together. So yeah, there you go.
Do either of you desire a one-minute response on that one, or shall we move on? It would be yours first if you did, Ms. Dirksen-Lonbrigan.
We can move on.
Okay. Ryan Denham?
Technology giants like Google and Facebook have amassed uncommon power, controlling a greater and greater share of our economy and our politics. This country has faced this issue in the past, forcing giants like Standard Oil and the Bell System to break up. Do you think that Congress should take any action, big or small, to better regulate Silicon Valley and the effect it's having on our culture?
A great question. First of all, I'll let Congressman LaHood know who's next door with Senator Rubio and Congressman Kinzinger, that you were very respectful of him, because he deserves it. He's a good guy, and he's doing a great job, and I'm proud to have his support in this race. I think this is something that's going to garner bipartisan support. You saw hearings of some of the tech giants coming into the House Energy and Commerce Committee and the Senate Committee of Jurisdiction, too, just a few short months ago. This is something to be able to go to these tech giants and ask them to explain their algorithms and explain how they're keeping a free and open access to their search engines and ensuring that there's no bias, because that's really what we want. Remember, we live in a society right now that at our fingertips, we have access to more information than every human that's ever lived in the history of the earth. And we got to make sure that that information gets to anyone who's searching for it without a company putting a bias on that information or stopping that information from being loaded into that specific web page. This is something that's going to be bipartisan when we get to Washington, when we return after the election. And I think you'll see some answers come out of the tech giants, which I think they should be answering.
Ms. Dirksen-Lonbrigan, regulation of the internet.
Well, you know, we need to make sure that it remains free and open, because that's the fundamental tenet of the internet, is to make sure that we can connect people. But clearly, we also need some checks and balances in the system, because what has been allowed to be perpetrated, the falsehoods, the lies, the inciting language, has had very dire consequences, I think, on our democracy. And I think most people would agree with that. And I do think that they need to bring forward to the table some ideas on how we can put in those checks and balances. You know, we've seen recently where Gab was the chat room that the shooter who went into the Pittsburgh synagogue, the Tree of Life synagogue, and harmed those people, and that this is what he was using. And it was open for people to see, but nobody did anything. And I do think that we bear a responsibility for the speech that we use. You know, we know that you can't yell bomb on a plane, and we should not be able to say whatever we want with no repercussions and no indications and nobody looking twice at us on a forum like that. And I also think that with Silicon Valley, something that we have to make sure that we're doing on our side as legislators is helping to protect their intellectual property. You know, it's not just Silicon Valley, it's also, you know, it's all over. And when people go travel abroad to places like China, that their intellectual property is getting stolen, not to mention what they're doing here. And so it's a two-way street. You know, we have expectations of them, and I think they have the right to expect us to hold some of the bad actors' feet to the fire on that.
Representative Davis, you have an opportunity for a one-minute follow-up.
You know, we do need to protect America's intellectual property. That's exactly why the Trump administration and Congress is trying to hold China accountable for their bad actions. This is exactly what we're trying to stop. That's a number one priority for this administration and number one priority for we Republicans in Congress. You know, it's interesting, my opponent wants to stand up to the Trump administration, but it's not willing to stand up to China when it comes to unfair trading practices and the theft of America's intellectual property. We can agree that we need our tech giants to be better monitors of themselves. The hate speech and the vitriol that we see on different sites has got to go. The crazed gunman who tried to kill me and my friends was frequently a visitor to sites that were anti-Republican and calling for injuries, if not death, to Republicans. Those are the things that have to be monitored by these giants and taken off, just like anti-Semitic behavior, too, and anti-Semitic sites.
Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, you have 1 minute.
I would just like to say that I actually did just say that I want to make sure that we protect intellectual property, and that includes going after China, who is a well-known bad actor. Thank you.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, and a debate between Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, the Democrat for the 13th District, and sitting U.S. Representative Rodney Davis. This is Sound Ideas as well. Let's move on to another question, this time from Mark Pickering of the Pantograph.
What should be the role of the federal government in making a college education more affordable for Central Illinois families?
Congressman Davis, you're first.
Well, this is something that's pretty personal to me. My daughter, who's an ISU student, is here tonight, and a good chunk of my family budget comes to pay for that education right here at this university, right here in this community. So I know what many families are doing to help try and afford a college education for their kids. And we've got to not only ask our institutions to do what they can to hold the line on tuition. I mean, places like Illinois State have done a great job in holding the line on tuition, as have universities like the University of Illinois in this district. But we also have to have options that just don't focus on what interest rate a student's going to pay later once they graduate. We've got to focus on making sure they borrow less principal. But when they have to make that borrowing decision as a family, we've got to give students and recent graduates, we've got to give them opportunities to help get those loans paid back. It's not just about protecting programs like graduate assistant tuition waivers that I did during our tax reform bill. It's not just about protecting student loan forgiveness programs for folks who go into public service like I'm trying to do as a member of the caucus that puts that as our number one priority. But it's also about passing my bill like the Employer Participation in Student Loan Assistance Act. This bill would allow employers to help pay down student debt just like they do for tuition reimbursement. If an employee at Bridgestone wants to go back to Heartland Community College or Illinois State or Illinois Wesleyan, that employer can pay up to $5,250 a year tax-free for that employee to go to school. Why can't we treat student debt the exact same way? It's garnered a lot of national support and a lot of bipartisan support from a few of my other friends like Scott Peters, who represents the San Diego area, and Jared Polis, who's likely to be the next governor of Colorado.
Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, 2 minutes to you.
Thank you. Well, here in the Illinois 13th Congressional District, we have over 180,000 college students. The average student in Illinois graduates with over $30,000 in debt. So being able to refinance your current student loans is important, and you should be able to refinance it like you do a mortgage. But I agree that that's not enough because we need to be more proactive about what we are going to do. I do think that we should expand things like our work-study programs and actually send students who are current college students back into high schools to help high school students navigate not just the college application process, but also the scholarship and financial aid process. That has been a good model. I think that could work. I think that's something that we should expand. I also do think that we should expand public service for student loan forgiveness. We have so many needs, even in the Illinois 13th, that could be best served by people from our community. And if they can go into the rural and smaller communities that really could use this boost and pay down their student loans while they're working, that's a win-win. I also think that we need to look outside the box a little bit. And there's been some really successful programs. Purdue University uses an income share agreement program where students on the front end don't have all the costs associated with college. But they do sign a contract, and they've got skin in the game, right? Because they sign a contract that says a certain percentage of their income for a certain number of years post-college goes back to the school. And it really does a nice job of aligning the interests of the students and the school. The college then has a vested interest in making sure that student is successful in school, job ready, and it helps with job placement. It's a good idea.
1 minute responses. Congressman Davis, you're first.
Well, I certainly think that this is a great example to the college students that are here in the audience and the high school students from Hayworth High School that I got a chance to speak with earlier this week and are now at this debate. They see that this is not a partisan issue. This is not an issue where we see complete disagreement. These are all great ideas. And we need to work together in a bipartisan way, like I've been doing in Washington, to try and get these ideas put into law. As a matter of fact, when you look at my employer participation in student loan assistance bill, if you look at, let's say, 2012, 153,000 graduates that graduated with about $30,000 in debt, I'll use my opponent's average figure, just in one graduating class alone, if you multiply that together, my employer participation in Student Loan Assistance Act has the potential to save $4 billion in defaults that are on the backs of the federal taxpayers. They're on the backs of you as taxpayers if we see defaults. Those are ideas that we need to pass, and I'm glad we see bipartisanship here.
And 1 minute to Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan.
No, it's okay. I think we said it all.
Howard Packowitz, you have the next question.
Thank you. The tax cuts passed by the Republican Congress and signed by the Republican president created an extra $1 trillion to the federal deficit roundabout. How should it be addressed?
And it's likely that we will not have time for the 1 minute responses on this one, but 2 minutes with Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan starting.
That $2 trillion was tax scam, was a corporate giveaway. We all know that. It went to the wealthiest among us. 83% of the benefits went to the wealthiest, corporations, and special interests. It was not a middle class tax cut. And now that they have blown this $2 trillion hole in the deficit, Mitch McConnell is coming back and saying, well, you know, I'm really worried about the deficit now. We're going to have to make some cuts. So we're going to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Not on my watch. I am endorsed by Social Security Works. I am endorsed by the Illinois Alliance of Retirees because I believe that those are earned benefits that people have paid into their entire lives. And changing the rules at the end of the game is not fair. I am not a supporter of this, you know, of this 83% to corporations, special interests, and the wealthiest. Any tax reform that I support has to be targeted at the middle class. I believe that's how we grow our economy, is from the middle class out.
Congressman Davis.
Results matter, and we're seeing a growing economy right now. 4.2% economic growth last quarter, 3.7% unemployment. Unemployment hasn't been that low since before I was born. It was 1969 the last time we had 3.7% unemployment. And manufacturers in Bloomington Normal are hiring right now. Good paying jobs. Tax reform worked. As a matter of fact, what we've seen, the Congressional Budget Office estimated that $1.5 trillion would be added to the deficit and the debt when it comes to our tax bill. But over the last year, they've changed those projections. Even the Congressional Budget Office has said that we've brought in $1.28 trillion because of economic growth. That's 88% of what was projected to be the deficit that's already been paid for and projected out for the next 10 years. That's success. I'm not cutting Social Security and Medicare. I've worked together in a bipartisan way to prolong the solvency of those programs. As a matter of fact, We, because of secondary medical reviews of those on Social Security disability, we saved taxpayers $198 billion. And as a matter of fact, we prolonged the solvency of Social Security because of good bipartisan ideas like that. And my opponent, unfortunately, is being dishonest again. She likes to bring up fact checks. Well, even factcheck.org said that 83% of the tax benefits did not go to the ultra rich. We're seeing those families making between $20,000 and $50,000 a year getting double the benefits of the ultra rich. The reason why this was fact checked wrong was because Democrats in the Senate didn't allow the individual rates to remain permanent in the bill that ended up coming back to the House, even though they were permanent before we left. And to fix that, I just passed a bill out of the House that's going to make those individual rates that give families in this district an average of $2,000 in their family budget, and I'm not going to take that away from them.
And that response brings us to the end of the question period of the forum and to two-minute closing statements. Betsy Dirksen-Landrigan, you went second for opening statements. You can lead off for closings.
Thank you, and thank you so much for being here tonight. Thank you again for having us. And you know, I wanted to remind Congressman Davis that I am also a constituent, and that when you went to Congress in 2012, that we were all rooting for you, that we all wanted you to succeed, and we were hoping for the bipartisan civility that you talked about. But that guy from Taylorville is gone and has been replaced with a career politician who votes with the Trump administration 97% of the time, refuses to be a check and balance on this administration, has voted repeatedly to eliminate protections for people with pre-existing conditions, over 300,000 in our own 13th district, and then lied about it. Not once or twice, but repeatedly. And is now going to pay for this tax bill, according to Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party, by making cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And I think that your commercials have been revealing. They have been very partisan and very personal, trying to make me into something that I'm not. I am not Nancy Pelosi. I am not Mike Madigan. I am not my husband. I am Betsy Dirksen-Landrigan. I am born and raised in Sangamon County. 150 years my family has been there. I'm a middle school teacher, a nonprofit worker, a proud mom and wife, and I am running for Congress to stand up for your health care, protect your Social Security and Medicare, make sure your kids can get an education. And while Congressman Davis has forgotten who he works for, I've put 60,000 miles in my car for my employers, and I'm never going to forget who I work for because I'm looking at you.
Congressman Davis, your 2 minutes closings.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Howard. Thank you, Ryan, and the great timekeepers. Thank you. Sorry we went over a little bit a few times. But this is a tremendous opportunity to see the differences that are very clear between my opponent and me. I'm somebody who is promised results as a member of Congress, promised bipartisanship as a member of Congress, and delivered on both of those. Not only do we see historic economic growth, we see so much potential for the next generation that I see sitting in this room. Your opportunities, because we chose economic growth and we choose good fiscal policies, are going to ensure that you have opportunities that generations before you could only dream about. Proud to be able to live up to those promises and keep those promises as your member of Congress. Now, we've got to do more. Even though I've got a history of protecting Social Security and Medicare for our seniors, my opponent and her allies continue to try and scare seniors into thinking that's different, and it's not true. And my opponent has continuously stood and been dishonest and outright lied about me and my record, even called out by one of the local newspapers in our district for grossly mischaracterizing statements that I made. These are the facts. If you want somebody who's going to provide 24-hour-a-day constituent service like I've done with families like the Palmer family in Decatur, who called me over a Saturday wondering whether or not their son may have been a victim of a tragic accident at sea on the John S. McCain. And when their worst nightmare was revealed, we were with them every step of the way, every single day, to make sure they got the answers they needed from our military. That's why we have over 3,000 constituent responses on a weekly basis. That's why I've held 35 open office hours, and that's exactly why we have constituent service that is the top-notch constituent service program in Congress right now, and I'm proud of it.
Time, sir. Thank you, candidates, for participating in this debate, furthering civil discourse in Central Illinois. Thanks to our panelists, Mark Pickering, Howard Pakowitz, and Ryan Denham. Thanks to our timekeepers, Becky Gropp and Alexis Kalish. Thanks to the community partners for this debate, the Pantograph, WJBC, Heartland Community College, Illinois Wesleyan University, Illinois State University, the American Democracy Project, the McLean County League of Women Voters, and WGLT. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The election is November 6th. Go vote. This is WGLT Normal.